it is. It's basketball. It's not a fucking soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Welcome back to the NBL podcast, everyone. We're in the thick of free agency, so we're trying as best we can to muster a bit of content. This week's pretty good. There's a fair bit to talk about. Before the program, though, if you're new to the program, subscribe. If you're a longtime listener but haven't given a rating and review, we'd love that too. Today, we're talking about Brett Brown, DJ Newble, Casey Prather, Bryce Cotton, Casper Ware, and a little bit of Ball and Hampton, amongst other things. But with me today is Andrew Canyon, who's come on the recent weeks and been a lovely companion to the show. Andrew, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Joe. Thanks for the introduction. It's I know we're in the depths of the off season, so it is good, I imagine, to have somebody to talk to. Trying to run a podcast where not much is going on all by yourself is a bit lonely.
This week, though, as I said,
I'm gonna be your foil.
Please. This week, as I said, though, this has been one of the better weeks of the last month. You know, there's been a couple of things to talk about. So I'm
actually thinking. Something has happened. Yeah, it has been a blessed relief to get some.
Let's start with your first dot point that I've got on your rundown here. Brett Brown, of the 36ers fired just this morning. You've got here, does he still have value for the Boomers? Can I throw that question back at you and then I'll answer it?
Oh, that's cheating. I wrote that so you could answer it. Yeah, Brett Brown jumped to the top of the bullet list. I think he does have value for the Boomers if he's left Philly in like good circumstances, which it seems like he has, although apparently they still owe him a few million dollars for his services yet to be rendered or something like that. But I think if he's still getting along with Ben Simmons, if he can entice Matisse Thybulle to get on board as well, then let's have him. But surely some of the cachet has fallen away from the signing. Now we have, as Boomers coach, recently fired Brett Brown. Doesn't have the same ring to it, does it?
No, not quite. I think I agree with all that. If he's got a good relation, the main thing is the relationship with Simmons and Thybulle, because really the Olympics, these guys are old enough, especially the Ingles, the Mills, the Bogutts, if he's there. You roll the ball out. They know what they're doing. Yep. So basically it's a matter of, can you bring in those younger guys and get along? The problem, I see two problems I have is, one, on the court, the way he structured that team, Philadelphia, seemed poor. I know they had injuries, but they didn't play. He didn't have them motivated. He didn't have them cohesive. He did things that flew against the common standard of basketball. You know, played a lot of his bigs together with Embiid and Horford when the plus minus was atrocious. You know, a couple of things that were just sort of, he just defied common logic and it bit him. You know, sometimes you can defy logic and come up trumps, but he didn't. But if he can get those guys to the Olympic team, I think that's the greatest success, you know? So yeah, he's still got value.
I feel sorry for him in a way. Like, he went through years of mediocrity as part of the process. He saw management make way. He survived the Sam Hinkie process, sort of died on the vine. But he hung in there and almost got them to the the promised land, but not quite. Yeah. And now he's on the scrap heap.
The worry I have, this is where his value may diminish, where it's a matter of, is he too Simmons, Thybulle, let's say Dante Exum, those younger NBA guys, is he too NBA? And would that cause a neglect of Mills, Ingles, your longer standing guys? I actually am really worried about this Olympic team just being split right down the middle by youth, young and old.
Yeah.
Can he integrate the two? I mean, if you look at what he did with the 76ers, you'd say no. I didn't think that was a team that played very well, and the team is a reflection of the coach. Were they motivated? Like, Joel Embiid was so uninspiring and unimpressive, and he was not inspired to play. Now, whether that's on him or Brett Brown or a bit of both, you know, that's for them to work out. But yeah, the Boomers are going to be – that's going to be an interesting tryout. You've got the Kay Bolden thing. You've got the Simmons, Thybulle, and then the older guys team. Like, are they going to be happy just saying, yeah, Ben Simmons, which should happen.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons, they're the ball. You're the face of our whole program. Are they going to be happy taking that huge back step?
They've put in the hard yards, haven't they? It's this is where they talk about, you put ego aside when you put on the national uniform, but geez, it's tough when you've it could be a big change of culture.
For sure.
So Basketball Australia, done it again.
Good luck. I wish them the best of luck. Boy, oh boy. You go.
Oh, I was just thinking Basketball Australia. Whatever they do, it seems to go pear-shaped.
I know.
You know, they probably thought they were on a real winner with Brett Brown signing. We've got an NBA coach.
If he gets Simmons to play, that's the main thing, because he's our best player and a damn good one.
Yeah.
I think that's it for Brett Brown. Don't you think, or anything, last words?
Nah. Well, one, do you reckon, I've done it again, I said no, and then one more. Do you think he'll get a job, or is he going to be
in
the
NBA?
Yeah.
Modern convention would say yes. Very seldom do guys, you know, get fired. But the success wasn't good. I mean, everyone says, oh, bounce of the ball against the Raptors and they get through. But, you know, what was wrong with this season? You know, they were playing terribly this year when they had a full-strength team, a year older, a year better. Just couldn't manage it. I mean, the question is, does he return to Australia?
Yeah.
Surely not.
Why not? He doesn't need the money. Get away from COVID, get away from the US.
Perhaps, but once, is it kind of like once you pop, you don't, you know, once you take a step back, you can't go back up? That's a tough transition to make, to go from NBA, come back to NBL, all the way on the other side.
I suppose he still sees himself as having a future in the game. He's not old enough yet that he would think that I'm done.
Tough conversation for him to have. No, I think he'll get interest. The NBA is a merry-go-round for coaches.
Yeah, just ask the Van Gundys.
There you go, precisely. DJ Newble to Japan. This is a quick topic. Basically, he's gone to Japan.
Yeah. What's going on in Japan?
They've got a couple of good players.
Him and Reese Vague.
Reese Vague
is hanging out. I think there's another one. They've got
Prather. No. Sorry, he went to Israel.
Yeah. Hanging out there in Japan.
Be a great place to play.
Oh, it's such a cool place.
Mm.
It's hard to fault anybody for choosing to go there, and they'll get doted on. People will love them.
So. Yeah, no, I think it's a great career choice. That's really it for new. It does suggest, what does it say about Cairns? Do you think he was pushed out the door? Like, oh no, we've got a secret deal with Cam Oliver. The ink just hasn't dried yet. Sorry, DJ. Good luck in Japan. Or was it DJ Newble? Hey, you're waiting on Cam Oliver. I've got a good deal in Japan. I want to sign it. Good day and good luck. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think Cairns would have closed the door on him entirely, but I think they would have made it clear that he's in the mix. Yeah, but not a guarantee. So if a deal's on the table, Japan, COVID-free, why not? Let's go for it.
You think Cairns would have given him sort of the waiter's shrug, like, may I see your table? There's touching of the touch barrier's been broken. There's a slight push, but it's not a shove. Is that kind of where we're at? Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Donald Sloan confirmed to Adelaide.
Have you seen much of him play?
Years ago, don't recall.
Okay.
But we spoke about it a bit. You know, I just look at the age, which is probably really unfair. You know, when guys like Hobson's around, Scotty Hobson, you've got a guy there who's big usage, big scorer, you know, seems to work well with the roster they've got thus far with Detch and Giddy and others. Sloan, it'd be interesting to see. But positionally makes a lot of sense.
It does. It does. I think they needed that veteran presence there to guide some of the young fellas and get them on board. I think it makes sense. He sounds like a decent guy. They had the interview with him.
Yeah, I saw that.
With Liam Santamaria, wasn't it? He seemed like a really nice, down-to-earth guy. Soon to be having a baby, so I assume he's going to leave them at home and travel over here by himself.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
Wow.
Good on him.
But good for Adelaide. My biggest question, I've got question marks about Adelaide in general. I don't think they're going to compete for a championship. But
I think finals is a stretch for him too.
Yeah. And I've got a big question mark over Connor Henry.
Right.
I just don't rate. From what I saw of him in his previous stint in the NBL, haven't seen him since.
Sort of what, 8-10 years ago?
Jeez, was it that long ago, far out? Yeah. Time flies. I don't rate him. I thought he was ordinary in Perth, and then he went to Sydney, I think, and carried on with the mediocrity. I just didn't see anything from him as a really good NBL coach. Yeah. So
I think he had a sort of freneticism about his coaching. And I remember I actually went back and looked at his huddles, and he kept saying, "All right." He said it like 10 times in one timeout, which is fine, but it just shows like often they have that, oh, hello, there's a guest on the show. Every now and again, when someone repeats something over, it's kind of like their mantra to relax themselves. And I just felt that was a little bit sort of, you know, maybe that was a long time ago, but is there still that sort of doubt in his own mind.
Yeah.
Hey, we will see. But yeah, I do share some of your concerns.
Yeah, I'll just check in with people. That noise in the background is a 4.5-year-old son of mine who has been making my whole day entirely exciting. So
Lego Spider-Man
it's been a long day.
Let's talk Prather. Let's talk Casey Prather. Yeah. This is an interesting one in that the writing was on the wall in chalk, or is it more resolute than that, do you think?
I feel like they had the texters out about 6 months ago, mate. Okay. I think this has been a long time coming. I never got the feeling that they really were keen on having him back, and they kept looking at that contract, taking it to the lawyers and saying, look, is there any way we can get ourselves out of this deal?
Well, that's the question for me. I mean, and I put this up on Twitter, and you thought I was being harsh, which is, I wear that. The import cull at United continues. It's now Casper Ware, Boone, Kennedy, Prather, Trimble, Long, and presumably Stanton Kidd as well. They're one of the, you know, Sydney have not overturned their, Perth have obviously kept Cotton and Tarico over the last couple of years with success. Like you look at the teams that kind of have a more of a foundation for success, they seem to hang on to their imports a bit better. But United, it's a turnstile.
Yep.
The cull, too harsh? What do you think?
It was very harsh, especially with the graphics you put on that Twitter. Yeah.
Fair point. I'd just seen Doctor Strange with Ewan McGregor, so...
What is it? The Overlook Hotel, isn't it? That's what they call it.
That's right.
The blood in the elevators, if anybody didn't see the tweet. Probably a little bit harsh, just because I think that Melbourne are kind to their imports. I think they are not. Mm-hmm. But I think the circumstances are a bit different here. I think the injury, I think they went further out of their way for any player, they being Melbourne United, went further out of their way than ever before to accommodate the return of a player. They really...
Why didn't they cut him last year?
Yeah, this is the thing. That's why I'm thinking the contract. There must have been some specificity to the contract.
I went digging around and I looked at that old contract, NBL contract from 2010-2011.
Yeah.
And in that, it basically said, if you're signed to a two-year deal, which this was, even for a restricted player, if you've completed the first year and you're cut before that second year, you get 50%.
Right.
And it's the same sort of proviso where if you'd done the first year, they would have paid him out either the end of his contract or 28 weeks after the contract. So basically they would have paid out the whole year and 50%. So it wouldn't really have mattered about the payment whether you cut him halfway through last year or now. Now, is there a way they could have circumnavigated paying him out? There's no way that an agent would sign him to a two-year deal. And after the year he's had with injuries and lack of production, that an agent would go, yeah, sure, no problem. We sign that two-year deal. Money's guaranteed in our bank account, but no. We'll do you a favor and we'll let you go. No way would anyone do that.
No. So there must have been some arrangement come to where there was a mutual agreed.
He must have got some payment of that second year. I think he got 50% of that second year and they just ate it.
Yeah, which was... It's tough business.
Why sign him to 2 years in the first place? I mean, I think his age, can I just have a little short little round of applause for you first sports, Prather's representation? Nailed it. Talk about it. Got this year off injury, get this second year, money for jam. Yep, we'll take 50%. Sign in Israel, probably for the same amount. He's barely out of unemployed for a minute. That is just fantastic. That is how you get your 13.5%.
Genius. And that signing, though, that Israel signing is the thing that made me question everything I've seen. Because if he really is injured for this coming year, and they didn't want to take the risk on him because, you know, 50-50, coming back, he's had multiple problems with that. They let him go, fair enough. So that sort of implied that he's not good to go. But then he signs a deal straight away.
Exactly. So his health, he would have been there saying, no, I'm fine. I'm in the USA. You can't come out and test me. I'm ready to go. I'm in Melbourne United colours. And then the fact that he's gone in Israel, again, as you said, would suggest that they're happy with his health. He's been able to prove that. And, so United, they kind of got him on half of his contract on their books next year.
And they haven't wheeled out a replacement import. So it's not like they had a guy waiting in the wings saying, look, we'll deal with Prather and then we're announcing you. You're our new guy. They haven't done that. So no. it's just a vacuum.
I think also, but then the name that came up for me was Keith Benson, when obviously South Melbourne wanted to get rid of him, but had to wait until someone picked up his contract. But can teams do that? So Prather signs this 2-year deal, does a year of it at Melbourne. Can then the agent stand around and go, all right, here's this 1-year contract. Will someone take it off Melbourne United's hands? That's not how it works, is it?
Not internationally, I don't think. I don't think that's an achievable outcome. I don't think that's how it works.
I wouldn't have thought so either. Like if you've got it's not apples for apples, but if I've hired a builder to work for 2 years for me and he does 1 year and then I go, okay, who wants this guy to build a house? just as far as contracts, if you distill them down, I'm just not sure how it works.
Mm. Mm. So lots of question marks there. Melbourne United continuing to confound the pundits.
Let's end it on that. I like that. Let's talk about, we've done DJ Newport. Let's talk about Prather's out. Casper, yep. We're back in.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, another one of the out clauses comes back.
He's opted in. Boy, the return on the opt-ins. It's only Nick Kay who hasn't. Cooks is back. Cotton's back. Casper Ware's back. Matt Hodgson's back.
Hodgson, that's the big one. Signed out, man, but he came back. What a relief.
He's back. I actually liked his play last year. But Cotton, he's opted in. So he's obviously gone. He's had the year he's had. He's gone out. He hasn't got anything else. And he's come back to the 50% cut. Or did they rejigger the deal? Have you read anything to say that they changed the amount?
I haven't seen anything. I don't think Sydney are going to come out and go out of the way to tell me anything either. I don't think they like me or you. I want Casper Ware to come back in FU mode. I want him to be pissed and trying to prove something to Bryce Cotton and the entire league that grand final series was an aberration and he's here to play. Mm. I would love that. I would love it if he's gone, I'm taking the 50% cut because I've got something to prove.
You know, that's interesting. And on that 50% cut, you be the Sydney Kings brass, Pongrass, Weaver, Paul Smith.
Yeah.
I'll be Casper Ware. If I was sitting across from you in the table and I said, I'm thinking about opting back in, but I want more money. I don't want to go with the 50%. Do you think I, as Casper Ware, have the bargaining power off my play to get more money?
I'm saying, Casper, you're coming off a terrible performance. We're doing you a favor by giving you a job. Do you know how many point guards, unemployed point guards there are out there? We can replace you quite easily. We'll get somebody who can fill the role. It'll be fine. We love you, Casper. We love you. We'd love to have you back, of course. But, you know, point guards, there's a lot of them. We've seen the TBT. We've got our options open.
You
watch love
the TBT?
Yeah.
Good for you. I mean, I don't think he has that at this point. I think he should have that. I just don't think he had the year he wanted to. And I don't think he'd be able to say to the Kings, I think he was on 800 grand. That's a rumor I've heard. So he's down to 400, which is pretty good cash regardless. And if he said, no, I want 600 like Cotton, I think they would have said, nah. And if you can get 600 grand from somewhere else with our living conditions, you sign that piece of paper. And there's a reason why he's back. What's interesting with this is all last year, it was like the Kings building the culture. Hoops Capital were building the culture. And I find it very interesting that their best player in Casper Ware would go, okay, you've cut my wage. I've seen your marriage proposal, but I'm just going to spend the next couple of months gallivanting around, seeing what else is out there, testing the waters, and now I've come back. Doesn't speak to a culture of like, I'm opting back, I'm in, no matter what the price. We're building the culture at Sydney Kings, put the crown on, let's go. It's like, just wait a minute, hang on, I'm just going to spend some time with these women here, see if, yes, let's do it. Let's have a June, I'll be a June bride. that was interesting to me. With Casper, three grand finals in a row. I mean, his shooting stats, how bad they were, jump off the page. I think he and everyone else would admit that, but three grand finals in a row with two different teams. It's no coincidence, is it?
No, I mean, he's a good player. He's a really good player. And I think I've lambasted him for that grand final performance, and so has everybody else. It's probably a little bit unfair because everybody has a bad run from time to time. He's a great player. He's good for the league. I like watching him play. He's got that cheesy smile. He looks excited to be out there. So it's good to have him back. But and maybe he'll get to that fourth grand final.
Maybe.
And what then if he wins it, what's that? That's two out of four. That's 50%.
That's pretty damn good return on investment for a player. Yeah. I'll say this about the shooting. NBL 19, Casper Ware shoots 283 three-point attempts in pretty much the same amount of games. NBL 20, that number jumps up to 334. So what, 50 extra? 50, that's two extra a game. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. Are the Kings and Weaver's three-point heavy offense the best fit for Casper Ware? The Kings shot a league-high 32.8 three-point attempts per game. You would not look at Casper Ware, even after his time in Melbourne, and say, you're taking six threes a game. We want you to. You're taking four threes a game. We want you to take six. I don't think. The mathematical analytical side of you goes, the more threes you take, even if you miss more, threes are worth more than twos, blah, blah, blah. Mathematically, it makes sense to shoot more, but I just don't think the eye test with Casper Ware specifically, I don't think that works well.
So I like it when I like it when he mixes it up. If he's shooting four or five threes a game, that's good. If he's attacking the rim in between, keeping the defense honest, he's not a stand him in the corner spot up shooter by any means.
No.
Those threes need to come out of an attack. Maybe a ball reversal, swing around, he pops back out, gets a shot off. Right. You know, that's where I want to see him doing his damage. You're right.
Posting up smaller guards. I mean, I know he's real short, but he is super strong.
Oh, yeah, defending the block. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, just try a few different things. But I think the direction to him seemed to be, if guys go under a screen, shoot it. Oh, you're 0 for 4? Just keep shooting it. The maths tell us it's going to go down. It didn't go down.
And it seemed like he was, you know, then he ends up taking ones from further and further out.
Right.
You know, and he starts forcing it. You know, he's the kind of guy that if he's hot, he'll hit those ones from ridiculous range. But I don't think that should be his first or second option.
I think they purposely said classic basketball logic of today, layups, free throws, three-pointers.
Yeah.
Which is sound, but, you know, it takes away what I thought was a bit of a strength of his game in Melbourne, which is just that little bit more play within the mid-range.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's the direction to him. And I think if you asked him, why did you shoot so poorly, I think he'd say, they just told me to keep shooting. I really think that would be his answer. That's what I think. Bogut's semi-departure. Is this a good thing for Casper Ware? Does he get more of a chance to operate and score in the paint without Bogut clogging the lane?
I think it probably makes it the pecking order a little bit more clear, who the go-to guy is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, like who takes over the team at crunch time. I think it's hard to say that Bogut is a disadvantage to have on the court.
Yeah, he's not, is
he? He draws a lot of attention. He plays good defense. He organizes as well. So I don't think it's right to say that it'll be addition by subtracting Bogut. Mm. But I do think maybe for that sense of who's the boss, that might help.
Yeah, I'm going to look at some on-off numbers for Bogut and Casper Ware. I'm going to see how those two play together and whether there was a sizable and noticeable jump in Casper Ware's shooting percentages when Bogut's on the floor, because maybe they slow down a bit. Maybe the pace goes down with Bogut. Maybe it doesn't. I haven't looked at the numbers, but that would be interesting because I think we can both agree at the end of this conversation, I am super keen to see Casper Ware come back. I think he's a really, really good player and he's fun to watch. And the Cotton him storyline, it's their league and they're on it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah.
Speaking of Bryce Cotton, you want to jump onto him?
Yeah, well, before we move into that, because I feel like there's still a room here. I think there's one more solid signing we just need to mention.
Okay.
Andrew Ferguson.
Great game.
Andrew. Development player for Perth.
Hang on, wasn't this guy formerly the host of Don't Forget Your Toothbrush? Or is that a different Ferguson?
The Doug Anthony All-Stars.
remember Man Oh Man? Anyway, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to go there. Do you know this kid?
No, I don't. I don't. He's tall.
They've signed a big guy. DP, big guy. Yeah. Are they a little bit worried about that spot? Do you think he's going to see time?
Well, I think he could be a good insurance policy if you need a couple of fouls racked up. So that's good to have. Apparently he's got three-point touch, but who doesn't these days?
Yeah, good point.
I like the idea.
SBL defenses, but when it's NBL guys closing out and you're hard.
Could change it. Yeah. But I like, fair play to him. I mean, Perth just needed to sign a local guy. That's been one of the things. The SBL and Perth basketball, WA basketball, hasn't really created any good players recently.
No.
So it's good to see one actually come through.
Good on him. So good luck to him.
Fingers crossed for the future.
Staying with Perth, Bryce Cotton. You say it.
Aussie Bryce.
That's my mate. We spoke about this. If he gets this citizenship, it's
over.
It's like,
I've been prevaricating on the Wildcats thinking they just don't have enough, but this, I mean, the calculations change. If he's if he's your Australian player, oh my goodness.
Mm. And to Emiliano Caccia, who's been on this program before. Mwah. Si bellissima. Uzi Woj, you know, he's kind of by proxy. Brilliant stuff from him.
How is he getting this? This info,
wow.
Who's he connected to?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. But I did quickly text him afterwards. I said, when you say close, how close? And here's a scoop for everyone out there. He said, very. He just said, very close. Yeah, I said, time frame. He goes, very, very close. That's all he'd say to me. But he did. It had a wink. It had that Italian charm to it. So I took that to mean a month or two.
Yeah,
before the season, in other words.
Before the season.
And that's all that matters. It can be a week before the season. It can be, as long as it's any time between seven games before the end of the season, it just wipe the deck, put all the money on in the world on it. What else was I going to say about this?
Well, I was going to say that you wonder, does it actually help the Wildcats if it doesn't happen too quickly? Because they can kind of watch and see a little bit. If he becomes an Australian now, there becomes pressure to sign another American straight away. But if he becomes Aussie through the season, you can say, well, what have we seen? How's everybody performing?
But you could do that.
What position
want to secure it first, because then you could always do that anyway. You could just hold the spot and just not sign anyone until they wish. So, you know, I think you just want to bank that, get it in and done.
Yeah,
obviously. But yeah, I see your point. I think even if he were to naturalize tomorrow, I think they'd still be a little bit patient with signing someone.
Okay, I wondered if they'd be able to be, whether there might be peer pressure, crowd pressure to.
Well, the question is, I think they want to look at Mooney and say, because is Mooney a center in the NBL? Could you go with Mooney and then go out and get sort of a switchy wing, sort of a Tirico, but a bit bigger maybe? I don't know. And kind of replace Wagstaff if you're more worried about him in that sense.
Yeah, I think this is going to potentially turn into one of the most intriguing elements of the season, because do they go a big? Do they get Plumlee back?
As one of my questions I had here, is Plumlee the too obvious signing for the Wildcats?
I liked Plumlee, and I think the team liked him. So in that regard, yeah, cool, bring him back. I'm not sure he will be the best option overall.
I agree.
I think he might be a bit too one-dimensional and maybe not right for the league.
It all depends on Mooney. Is this guy a four or a five is in the NBL, especially this NBL? There are no bigs. There's no one out there playing big in the NBL.
No. So really, I think if he can pull it off, great. If he can get by with him and a bit of small ball Wagstaff playing the five or something. I mean, he's done that before. And you got Majuk, of course, as well.
Yeah.
So maybe either the Wildcats, you're going, do we get an import one?
Well, that's the other question I had for you. Like, I think you've really got to look at Norton and just his injury. Like, if you miss four games in the NBL and then Kevin White's your starting point guard, you got a problem. You're not going to secure top spot. And home court advantage, depending upon hubs and that, is really important. So it's really interesting. And I would love to see Bryce Cotton paired with a guy who's like a real distributor, scorer from the 1-3-point shoot. Imagine if you had a backcourt that could shoot in Perth. I think they'd be better like that.
It's been a decade since we've had that.
That's the funny thing. Here's the other fun little fact for everyone out there. Casper Ware arrived in Australia November 2016. Cotton arrived January 2017. One is becoming a citizen, one is not. One went to the Perth Wildcats, one didn't. The Perth Wildcats, they put imports in a trance. James Crawford, Ricky Grace, so on and so forth. You know, the list of guys who come and stay for long term.
Yep.
That is the blueprint for success for not only the NBL, but the country's basketball program. Look at who's going to be starting for the Boomers. Simmons, Exum. You know, these guys are the sons of imports. Like, yeah, you've got to target guys and treat guys so that they'll stay and naturalize. That's how pillars of programs get made. And Perth seemed to work it out, and they really seem to headhunt for it. And other teams either don't or won't. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. It seems obvious, doesn't it?
Mm, it does. Like, with Donald Sloan coming over, he's probably a little bit older. But, you know, the family comes with. Like, no, Brink, come. Yeah. Schools, safety, protection, Adelaide, great spot. Same thing with any and all the others.
Yeah, your kid's not going to have a gun put to their head in Adelaide, are they?
No.
No metal detectors in the school gates there.
Yeah, and just quality of life and just good pay and, you know, like, hey, try it out. If you like it, great, and if you don't. But there doesn't seem to be that conversation. Like, someone like Lamar Patterson. How Brisbane didn't go, bring everyone. We'll see how this works. Maybe that was on the cards. I don't know. But Perth are the only ones who seem to bring home the bacon.
I listened to a promoting another podcast. I don't know, their competition.
Yeah, do it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was the Andrew Gaze and Leonard Copeland hosting a podcast now.
What's that called? The Alley Oop podcast?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know what
it's called. No, everyone listen to that, by all means.
But it's fun because it's Andrew Gaze and he's always fun, you know. Yeah. They had Jason Gaddy talking to him.
Oh, yeah. What
And it was interesting. He was saying he thought Lamar was going to be a long-term teammate and that they were building around him and that he was the centerpiece of the team. And he was shocked that he signed elsewhere. And he basically said, look, you know, it's a reminder that at the end of the day, this is just a business. Mm. And I was like, oh, that hurts, doesn't it?
That's sad.
You know, like, he really seemed like he thought Lamar was bought in.
That is sad. Yeah. I mean, I got that same impression. I just thought, but then you look at the way he signed last year, and I don't know who his agent is. It could be the same as Bryce Cotton. No, it's not. You know, what's the agent saying? The agent's probably sitting there going like, hang on, I can make 13.5% off a little bit more in New Zealand. We're going. Also, Matt Walsh, like he's a real good owner to have because he's young. He's American.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a former pro and not, you know, a pro. He played in the NBA and across Europe. He can bend guys. He can twist their arms into doing his bidding. I really feel like that. He's got great – if you're a young owner, you know what I mean? Like, you can hang out with the owner. What a lifestyle they have over there. So he's done well to get Patterson. Cotton, I think that's really it on him. But yeah, that happens. It's the season, and fair play to everyone. Let's go to LaMelo Ball and Hampton. They've been in the news recently with the draft lottery's been cemented, the NBA lottery. And I'll quickly give it to you. It's as follows. This is the order. Timberwolves, Warriors, Hornets, Bulls, Cavaliers, Hawks, Pistons, Knicks, Wizards, and Suns. That's the top 10. That's where they both were projected to go before they came to the NBL. Ball at present is projected to go third or fourth. LaMelo Ball. We haven't spoken about it. He's not voiced. Now his name now comes back up with the draft. What do you think of his play and as best you can from your armchair at What sort of NBA draft prospect is he?
Well, based on my understanding of the draft class of this year, he should go pretty high. Not to say that he's the most talented player ever, but I don't think that the strength of the entire class is that high. So not surprised that he's moved up the board again. His time in Illawarra, well, it was like watching a car crash. You know you shouldn't watch, but you can't help but watch. Mm-hmm. It was a basket case. And I think, I don't know if I've spoken to you about this before, but I've certainly, it was just one of those things you think, this team is just shocking. And they are giving the basketball to an 18-year-old kid and just saying, yeah, do what you want. It's fine.
I like the way you said that. So you don't feel like he came in with his management, Jermaine Jackson, kicked down the door and said, all right, Hawks, here's how it's going to be. You feel like he walked into a gym of literally guys, you know, scratching their heads like, oh, okay, you want to play 35 minutes and have a usage rate of 40% and shoot whatever shot you want. Well, we didn't have any other plans. It's kind of like at a wedding. It's like, if anyone objects, speak now, forever hold your peace. And no one said anything, and they just let him do it.
It just seemed like there was no institutional culture that could hold him to account. So it was like, oh, why not? You know, you're here. You're the guy that's brought in this slam sponsorship. I guess you're pretty important to the team. If you don't get on the court, we're not going to have any money from slam. Yada, yada, all the TV crews. Yep. It's like, you're the guy, I suppose. So let's see what you got. And Matty Flynn just being like,
I really don't even think it's a result of, I must admit, the manager on the sideline was jarring. I didn't like that.
That was weird.
And it's just not an Australian thing, not an NBL thing. But who knows? Maybe just they're supporting. I don't know how much of a sort of, but I've sort of changed my stance on this. Before, I think the knee-jerk reaction is to blame Ball and go, this guy's selfish, he's holding the ball. I think he fell into a vacuum, which we just said. I'm going to be a little bit ruder. I mean, we talked about Brett Brown at the top of the program. I just think Coach Flynn had no idea what he was doing. And I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but I think he not only had no idea, but didn't have the fortitude to put something in place. Like, even forgetting the mellow ball. Remember Hobson? Like, sometimes he'd come out of timeouts just cussing him out, and he'd still play 30 minutes, even though they had younger players that could have blooded. Like, it just, there was no grit there. And I don't think LaMelo Ball was, advantageous or sort of snaky in taking over the team. I think he just, it was a vacuum he fell into.
Yeah, I just think you're right. That, I feel Matt Flynn, I think he is a really nice guy. Worst possible person to have in that situation.
He was an assistant coach, and he looked it. Where the rotations are, the starting five is changing every second week. The rotations run 11 men deep, everyone's getting their 20%, because that's what an assistant coach does. They're not the hard line. These are my eight. These guys get 30. Sorry, guys, they're the hand around the thing. And I'll talk to the head coach. That's what I think is the impression of an assistant coach. And then you add ownership, and I'm going to say this, borderline criminal. If they have a problem with that, bring your ledger, get in touch with me. I'll happily sit down, because the stuff I heard from lack of superannuation, getting rid of people in the office a week before they had to pay them, all that kind of dodgy stuff, and then the year before that. So you come into a situation like that, you're grappling for some kind of leadership, and they found it an 18-year-old.
And what's he got? I mean, his motivation for being there was to showcase himself. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, he said, he wanted to do the team thing, and he probably made a couple of mates while he was there, but they're not going to be long-term, hanging out. It was about him putting on a show that he could put on
and
his
getting
mixtape
better.
For the NBA.
Mm.
Yeah, and competing against – and he did it. Look, 18 years old, he played really well. His outside shot is terrible.
Yeah.
And as many as he put up, of course, he hit a few, but that was a joke. But everything else about his game was really pretty good.
Oh, his size, his positional size. I don't think he's particularly strong, but his sort of length and height and craftiness with the ball was really good. And I think case he could go one, because
there's other people in the NBL, I'm sure, that could put on similar performances, but they don't, because they're being professionals and they're paid to run a set. Score the ball in a particular way, not showcase their abilities.
I'll just say this. I'm hesitant, like a lot of people have been online, to point the finger at an 18-year-old. It's just too young. If he's not, he is only as good as the mold he's cast in, and the mold was very, very poor. Like, I remember when Illawarra first played Southeast Melbourne. You can go back and watch this if you want. John Robertson. They're going under him on screens, and he's just lighting them up. And it's like, did you scout this guy? He played a couple of games in the NBL already at that point. Maybe they thought he fluked all those threes he made against Melbourne. Whoever else. It's just baffling. So I think it's really unfair to go at Ball like that. And Ryan Russillo on the Bill Simmons podcast really went at him. And he did say something like, why didn't the adults on that team jump on this kid? And that's my question I throw to you. Like, do you think they wanted to? Do you think they didn't care? Do you think they didn't have the fortitude? What do you think?
Well, I'm trying to think, who were the adults? You had Ooh. You probably had Tim Conrad, who he's never struck me as somebody who's going to get really fired up in particular. Mm. You had David Anderson, who was probably, he was back in the rocking chair, you know, 41 years old or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like total different generation. Who else? And the coach obviously didn't show any leadership. So I don't think there were enough. There was not an adult who was going to stand up.
The one who I thought was probably Josh Boone, but yeah, he's at a career transition where he's kind of, you know, if he's the guy who starts standing up as an import, especially, it's like, oh, making a little bit too much noise, you know. So
so many of them, I think they had an inferiority complex about it. It's like, oh, we're just shitty little Illawarra. Wow. Sorry, excuse me. That's crappy little Illawarra. You know, we're not that great anyway, and this guy's probably really going to be better than us, so we'll just mind our own business.
And then the case in point is I think they lost just as many games without him as they did with him. So at least they beat Cairns twice. I don't think they beat – or they beat Sydney on New Year's Eve without LaMelo Ball. Okay, that's a great win. And outside of that, I think they lost more games without him. So, yeah, no, I think it's really unfair to be like, oh, this kid's selfish. This kid came in and did all that. I just don't think that's the case. I really don't. Yeah. Let's jump on to the other next star, RJ Hampton. This is an interesting case. Originally projected in the top 10 when he first came to the NBL, number 8 by Bleacher Report in March. He now sits anywhere between 11 and 22. NBADraftNet.net has him at 25. Oof. There's a big the money difference between going in the top 10 at 8 and going late in the first round is, you know, it's sizable because, you know, the guaranteed contract's 4 years. I won't go into it, but it's a lot. He just recently changed his agent. Did you see that?
I saw that news, yeah.
I didn't read into it, but yeah, he changed it, which just says to me, oh boy,
things aren't going
just
well.
Before the draft, red flag. Yeah. That's where you march in, you finger point. The draft stock is it's falling. What have you done? You're out of here. That's a panic move from a player, especially a couple of weeks or months out from the draft.
Yep.
My question to you, Andrew, is Hampton's draft stock dropping as a result of his play and who he is as a player or his time in the NBL?
I really don't know. It's a really hard one because we haven't really got much evidence to go on, do we? He did a bit in the NBL, and I thought he was fine, but his minutes declined. But
He's as quick as a whip. He is really quick.
But it seems like his draft stock has drifted down since then. So I don't know if you put it down to him or the relative competition he's up against. Is it that are they moving up, which is obviously cascading him down? I don't follow the draft deeply enough to really know, oh, so-and-so's had a great season in the short college season we had or what have you. I don't know. It's a bit of a mystery, especially this year.
I think I go back to one occasion where I watched them play. I was live at this game. And do you remember it was the day that Brad Rosen interviewed Rod Hampton? Remember that really good interview? I was sitting right behind them. I didn't make the tally, unfortunately, but I was sitting right behind them. So I was keeping an eye on Rod and I was watching the game, whatever. And New Zealand were never going to win it. At that point, Hobson was still injured. And I remember at about the 6 minute mark of the fourth, Hampton got subbed out. You know, the crunch when they were still around. They lost by 7 or 8, something like that. Anyway, the game was kind of in the balance. And as he got subbed out, he is looking at his father, who's seated about 2 rows in front of me, and he is just staring, dead stare, as he comes off the court, looking at Rod, insinuating like, are you're seeing this? I'm coming out of the game. Like, this is what I came here to do, is to learn and play crunch. Came off, didn't shake any hands, didn't look at Dan Shamir. It was just straight walk to the bench. And he sat on the bench and he's just staring at Rod Hampton. And Rod Hampton's like, I couldn't see whether he was mouthing anything or looking back. But I got a sense that he was kind of like, this is, you know, don't, you're pouting and stop this immediately. He's kind of, I saw him kind of shaking his head.
Yep.
I was like, this is interesting. Now maybe I'm reading way too much into it. But gee, that stare said a lot. And I think he was promised that he would play crunch time. I wonder if there's any friction between Shamir and Walsh as far as the handling of Hampden? I don't think so, because he got a, what, 2-year extension halfway through the year. But boy, yeah, that said to me, and I guess the question I really have is, in that interview with Brad Rosen, Hampden goes, you know, in college, you don't get Bryce Cotton, Casper Ware, and Bogut in college. And he said that as a good thing, you know, as in you come to this league, you get their tutelage. But maybe it's a bad thing, the fact that you have those guys, because they're getting the attention, they're getting the minutes. My question to you is, basketball, is it a sport of doing and learning and doing, or can it be acquired via veteran osmosis? What do you think?
No, you need to play it. You need to be exactly involved and do it, you know, getting the reps. It's critical that you play.
My question then is,
yeah,
does Hampden make the NBL? I mean, his stock has fallen big time. Does it make the Next Stars look like a bad idea for a prospect?
Oh, it depends on circumstance, perhaps. Mm. I think the risk is, as well, you're playing against these professional guys, and they're older, they know what they're doing. They can make you look bad. Yeah. But if you're playing a first, you know, freshman college kid, and you can destroy him, you can look really good.
Wouldn't that just by virtue make you a better player, make you look better, improve your draft stock? I just don't see how this was a good idea for their particular instance. Didi, great. Brian Bowen, who was an interesting case and couldn't go to college. So yeah, okay, makes sense. But for those two, where it's just they just need the ball and need to practice being, you know, under that spotlight, I wouldn't have done it. I think it was a bad decision at the time. Certainly now, you know, with hindsight.
Yeah, it probably was, but it brought a lot of attention to the NBL.
The NBL sits there and goes, "Hey, great for us.
Good investment.
Yeah, amazing investment, especially when they get drafted and there's the buyouts of the second year." So,
and you can't put that aside. You can't forget the money. Yeah, you get competition, but you've also just earned way more money than you would earn playing college ball.
That's true. Probably the best part of $750,000 by some accounts is what these guys made with signing a deal.
I guess they did the calculus and thought, well, we can still get in the NBA, still get that big deal.
I mean, the thing is, if Hampden had went eight, let's say he goes 25, which he's projected, if he'd gone eight, he's looking at losing anywhere between 10 and 20 million. I think I read an article by New Zealand guy, and his name's Steve Cousens, COZENS. Right. I saw an article by him that showed, you know, what he would get if he was picked eighth as opposed to late in the first round. And it was more than 600,000 or whatever he made in the NBL. So I think, and it really begs the bigger question of future of the Next Stars. Would you agree with me? It's with guys like Didi, guys who've been, it's draft and stash rule. I don't think it's for up and comers.
I think the bastardization that we're seeing this year is like, you know, who is and who isn't a Next Star? It's all just getting a bit too ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. And I just also feel, I don't think the NBL is prepared for the sort of fawning over young athletes. I just don't think that is so against the grain of Australian sport. But then again, the NBL would sit there and go, well, people bought a ticket to the games. I mean, when LaMelo Ball went to Perth, that was a hot ticket. When he went to Sydney, it was a hot ticket. When that game in New Zealand was a molten magma ticket. So, you know.
And you talk about advanced metrics in basketball, advanced metrics in business. It's about how many Instagram interactions did you have and how many likes did you get on Facebook? Mm. You know, that's stuff that's measured and that people build marketing cases around, you know. So maybe that achieved their goals as well.
I think they've have to, if there's another sort of RJ Hampden type who's thinking of coming to be the Next Star, the talk, the persuasiveness of the NBL to say, no, you won't be another Hampden, that's going to be a tough sell. LaMelo Ball, his gravitas carries him through, but those guys in that area, that's a toughie. Looking at the rundown we've got here, and you want to talk about uniforms, far away.
Well, yeah, do we still have time to go into this? I don't think it'll take too long.
Do it.
Look, we're going into a new deal in the NBL with Champion. Mm-hmm. Champion were involved in the past, and I think it was around the year of
I've got here. It was the Connor Henry year at Perth, I think.
Yeah, the super shiny uniforms when everything was oversized and baggy.
Yeah,
terrible. And highly reflective. It was like high-vis uniforms. You'd wear them as a roadwork crew. Wasn't a big fan of those. But I reckon maybe they were a victim of their time. Maybe Champion this time around will do well. People seem pretty pumped by it.
Yep.
Couldn't be worse than first ever.
I thought first ever were okay, you know. I thought that some of the designs were quite nice.
Yeah. So, but it goes to a bigger issue, and I know I'm going to have one person agreeing with me, and that's Body Nodge, because I know he gets fired up about this one.
I've seen his articles, yeah.
You have NBL wearing, you know, the home team wears their colour and the away team wears the white, mm-hmm. which is boring because it's like it's the same thing. It's the same thing that the home fans see the same team roll in each week. They see the white team. We have 9 teams in the league.
Soon to be 10.
Okay. Now, let me get a colour wheel out and look at the colours. Right. And I'm thinking, how often do you actually clash with primary team colours? So if Phoenix are – now, green. I don't know. I still like to think of them as green because they should be green. They shouldn't be black. I don't know what that's all about. But so Phoenix play Cairns. That's orange and green. That's perfect. Fine.
No clash.
They play Sydney. That's
green and purple. Classic and purple. Colour that combination,
works.
Yeah.
That works well. They come to Perth. They play
red,
green and red. That's cool too. Go to Adelaide. Blue and green.
Green. No problem.
So far, I'm not picking up any. And I think you could probably work through the same thing with every team. And
sky blue in New Zealand. Navy blue in Melbourne. Yep. Presumably, Tasmania's the one that's the iffy one, but used to not.
So why do we even need these white uniforms and used so consistently? It's colour versus colour.
I mean, Body's posed a question, you posed a question. I don't understand it, and especially when you're desperate to become a TV product.
Yep.
It doesn't pop, does it? And when there's so many options. I mean, I spoke to Tyson Beck about this. He designed some of the NBL stuff, and he said, you know, you're having the other certain amount of fabrics and the jerseys are on a grid because of the sponsorships, a few things like this. I don't know. I mean, how Southeast Melbourne weren't green away or at home, sorry, and why? I don't know. And there was a talk of, you know, the fabrics didn't work out and things like this, but there's a lot of sports teams that wear green.
So
I don't understand how that's the case. But I think, I've seen this article from Body. I just couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and it's not, I'm not mean to steal his material, by the way. This has been a bugbear of mine for ages as well. You're just giving me a platform. And then you've got Cairns who are orange, right? So why couldn't their alternate? And I think it used to be back in the day, it used to be a blue, right?
Blue with like a sand colour. Yeah, sandy, creamy colour. That's right.
Back in, you used to have Sydney, I think. They used to be purple. I think then they had a black. And then finally maybe they rolled out a white if you had to. Mm. Perth used to run with white at home, and then they had a black and then a gold. You know, they used to have multiple strips.
Yeah. I think you asked me why is this the case, and these are the only answers I can come up with. One, because, you know, what is the NBL's plan to get a commercial deal? Because if you're desperate to get one, and I'll talk to you off camera about the phrase I use for this, but if you're desperate to get one, every little thing, every little visual counts. It all counts. How you do your stadium, how you do your branding, how you do your dressing, your uniforms especially. It's a huge part of it. So because they're not a commercial product, are they not paying attention to it? Are they thinking, oh, yeah, that'll be fine? Like these things, you look at how popular, and I think it's a misunderstanding of how popular jerseys are. I don't buy jerseys. I'm not a huge logo guy. But, gee, I can see their impact. You walk around. Like this whole Tasmanian name thing, they could be called the Tasmanian – I don't care. Call them anything. Doesn't bother me, but I can see it means so much to so many. So don't just sort of fob it off like, oh, it's just a name. No, these things matter to a lot of people, especially younger crowd and that gets parents involved. So maybe it's an oversight is the first and obvious reason. And then the other reason is what deal was in place with First Ever? And then the actual thing would be, what money are they making off jerseys? You know, do they sell a lot? Do they think it's a viable thing to invest in material, design, so on and so forth?
So just white's cheap and you just do white times 9.
Yeah, white times 9, black times 9. Or they just haven't thought that through enough. Or, that'd be the only two things I can think of as to why you wouldn't. Because if you had a business and you wanted to do it well, you wouldn't micromanage, but you'd be invested in every single thing. And it just doesn't seem like there's – but also it's just sitting on tradition. And we were talking about the Elam ending. Like, I would just instigate the Elam ending tomorrow. I just couldn't put it in fast enough. It's different. It's new. I'd go back to 12 minutes with an Elam. And I just do it tomorrow. And, oh, the tradition. And tradition change. Who cares? You know, so – and you either – make these bold steps so you don't. And I just think with the uniforms. And the other thing I've said to the uniforms is I'd make every jersey or any new teams coming in, you can't change the Wildcats, but to only native animals, because then it plays to an international audience where I think, oh, this is fun. This is different. This is interesting. Whereas if you're the Phoenix, I mean, in Southeast Melbourne, if you're, you know, Wildcats in Perth, I mean, they've got a name and they're established, but, you know, Sydney Kings, I mean, we are a constitutional monarchy, so maybe. But, you know, there's a lot of great inventive stuff you could do with funny, interesting kangaroo and koala characters that's totally unique. So if you're interested in people buying stuff, imagine if you docked in, say, Sydney and thought, oh, I want to buy his local sports team one. Sydney's got a certain Australian. But if you had one that's Aboriginal, Indigenous, dot art, and it's got a koala – that's just whether you like basketball or not. That's a collector's item. It's a nice piece. Yep. Nice. So I don't know. I just,
Bit of a rant. So that's all right. I've got one little bit more of a rant with my uniforms, if I can just finish it off. Because the other thing that comes up with the uniforms, so you fix the colors. Now you've got the issue of, do you go with the template? Now you sort of mentioned the sort of the issue about designing and grids and so on.
Breast pockets and, you know,
the sponsors. Yeah. Yeah, do you like the way that they've gone in recent years where there's basically a templated design for every uniform? You're essentially the same thing, which is a different color and a different logo? Or do you like a real, everybody's totally unique?
I think it operates under the assumption that if it's in the same place, it'll draw the eye. And I think that's a mistake. I think you got at one point or another, you just have to give your trust. You have to surrender trust to artists to think, all right, here's our logo. Where will it work? Where will it actually draw the eye? And you know, you look at all those artworks. I don't want to sound, you know, a bit wanky about all this, but, you know, the way they sort of use colors in certain spots to draw the eye, perspective, you know, these artists can do some really clever stuff. And the biggest case in point, the practical example I can give is when Cairns had a logo on the floor, something like Avenco, Avoco. I mean, the fact that I remember the name, it says that, you know, and it was a transparent logo where it just had the lettering on the wooden hardwood.
Okay.
And then later in the year, it went to a literally white panel underneath with it written. I kind of remembered the name when it was transparent. I didn't look at it when it had a opaque background behind it. You know, stuff that's a little bit more classy. It's like Apple Mac versus PC, like the Apple Mac, that, you know, the one that had the colored container, just drew the eye and as a result sold well. Did it have better hardware than the PCs? No, not really. But it was something different and interesting that drew the eye. So, I think it's really important to do that stuff.
And I sort of wonder, because the NBA uniforms, they just seem to draw the eye a lot better. And I'm sort of wondering why, and I'm not a designer by any means, but is it just the lack of sponsorship logos stuck all over them, or is it something else? Is there a design ethos that they do better? I've noticed they seem to be willing to play with the design and the styles, and they sort of freestyle with the names a bit. So, you know, if it's Brooklyn, they might have BKN or something like that occasionally instead. And they mix up their designs.
What I'll say there is, they do not get stale, do they? I mean, sometimes I have to remind myself which team is playing. They wear home on the road, road on the home, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, you can get pretty stale.
And I know that's budget, and it costs a lot of money to do that, but they make it up in, because you sell a new set of them each time.
Yeah, right.
I just feel like, okay, so getting back to the initial point, the NBL have this new deal with Champion. What does the deal consist of? Is it just, hey, Champion rollers out at 9 different uniforms that are basically different colors of the same thing? Or have they put some stretch targets in? What are the, you know, have they?
That would be interesting to know.
The power go in that contractual deal? Are Champion trying to establish themselves in the market, so are willing to push a bit further? Or is the NBL just grabbing whatever contract they could find?
I'll try and get in touch with Champion. I've tried to be in touch with Hungry Jack's because Hungry Jack's seem to want a piece of basketball big time, NBL and NBA. And I wonder why. You've got an athletic product like basketball with burgers. The age demographic matches up pretty well. Young men, you know,
yep.
that's very much Hungry Jack's wheelhouse. But the sport, you know, I mean, it's American. Hamburgers are American. Okay, I kind of see the connect, but I want to know what they see in the deal. Mm. Champion, what are they seeing in the deal? Yeah, I mean, I've always thought Champion was always sort of not a particularly aspirational brand like Nike or Adidas. They're the big brands in the space. So maybe they are going for basketball's a partition sport. We'll do equipment that's very purpose-built. Maybe not the most flashy, but, you know, last you longer or something like that. I don't know. That is an interesting question to Champion.
Mm. And is the NBL still in bed with Kmart?
Yeah.
Because, so is Champion like, is that Kmart level branding or is it, you know, something a bit higher than that?
And then the gay sneaker comes into this conversation because that's come back. And I wonder why. And I would never, I've hurt my ankle in a pair of gazes. I wouldn't look at them, let alone buy them or wear them. But why are they all of a sudden coming back?
I'm not sure they're NBL endorsed, the Andrew Gaze sneaker.
No, jeepers, creepers.
And actually, speaking of his podcast, I heard him mention that they were going to be available because he plugged him again in his podcast.
Yeah.
Course, I heard they're going to be available at Big W.
Oh, jump ship.
Big W versus Kmart. Hello.
Wow, that's like David and Goliath. No, Montague and Capulet. Big W. I think with those, I mean, why are they coming back now? Why now? The Gaze star has always been, it's not at its height. It's obviously not since his playing days, but it's still, you know, Gaze is still well known. But why now?
Yeah.
Why are they coming back? Is there this
reason? Why not when he was coach of the Kings?
Yeah,
was there
exactly.
A lead time issue with the production run? Or?
You know, some colorways that are purple and gold. You know, these things could have worked, but they're bringing them out. It'd be interesting to see the sales. I don't know. Maybe he was owed some money from the 90s and they kept him out of. Great question. The NBL. And I think, I mean, you look at the space of it, right? I would have thought sports apparel, huge business, however many million-dollar business, right? If you can get one of 10 kids to, instead of buying an NBA jersey, buy an NBL jersey, you could do the numbers on that and it's worth investing in and worth getting good designers. And here's the other thing that bugs me as well. You got Tyson Beck sitting in Adelaide. He's had a little bit to do with the NBL. The NBL should go, we are a Tyson Beck brand. He designs everything from our logos to our jerseys. This guy is hot property in the NBA. And he's sitting in Adelaide. You got to get this guy. And then I don't know if you're watching NBA NBA Inside TNT or whatever it's called, where they put up a guy by the name of Lee Olsen. He did a photograph of Kobe and Shaq together, but they had aged. It was really charming. He's Australian. He's sitting
there. Really? Around.
Why is the NBA plucking out these guys from obscurity? You got to get on that. If Lee Olsen, I don't know Lee Olsen from anyone else, but if he hasn't received a call in the last couple of days from the NBL, that's a mistake. Even just to touch base and see what are you doing in the space? What do you want to do? That's an error because the NBA will take him. And
You
know, these guys are good and they're sitting around in this country. So
yeah,
they're there. Anything else on uniforms?
No, that's it. Just I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully it's a new start.
I really do. And I hope I like caricature stuff. And also I think that if you could pick one team to change their logo, redesign their logo, who would you choose?
Oh, well, I've never been a big fan of the Bullets.
Yeah, pretty simple, isn't it?
Yeah, so probably them.
Okay, Bullets. I'm going to go the Wildcats. I just think you can better than that. The current one, it's not inspiring. It's not scary cat. It's not. Yeah. It's halfway between a real cat and a cartoon cat. I'm not on board with that one.
And that star that it's sort of living inside of.
Yeah, the star, like star and the cat. I don't understand how the two correlate to one another. But
I think that could use some work. Not going to disagree with you there. I have some questions. Patreon. This is a way for people to support artists and creators that they enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I saw in the show notes of the last podcast that went out a link to a Patreon support for the NBL podcast.
This is true.
So, Joe, what are you thinking? Well, what's going on here?
If anyone knows me, they know I like fast money, okay? Loads of money. No. It is a way to kind of make a bit of scratch, but gee, if you're thinking you're going to get rich off it, that's not what's going on. Ultimately, it's a way to own the content. And I did talk about this with you off air. It's a way to have, because right now I put out everything for free and it's open to everyone. And as a result, I'm open to criticism from everyone. So I just thought it might be a bit nicer if it's a bit more exclusive, if I own the content, if I'm more responsible to it. Right now, I feel like I'm a little bit cavalier on these sites, putting stuff up. Whereas if I feel like if I have a Patreon, it's there, it's in a nice place, people are bought in, and you know, there's that relationship. It turns it into a
little speakeasy, like a cheers exactly. bar or something, where everybody knows your name and
where yeah. I'm more responsible, where I'm responsible yeah. to someone. Oh, these people paid $5 a month; they deserve some content in return, not just what I'm doing at the minute, which is just sort of throwing stuff up willy nilly, a little bit more focused, and then also the monetary remuneration is nice as well.
And you mentioned that $5 a month and people are all over the internet going, what? The internet is meant to be free, man. Mm. Come on. Now, I will just tell you before you launch into a defense of that, I think that is totally fine and reasonable. I actually pay for a number of other podcasts that I listen to because I like them and I want them to stay around. And I know that, you know, this stuff can be fun, but it can also be expensive and it can be a pain. And you sometimes can think, why am I even bothering? But if somebody has put in even just a couple of bucks, suddenly you think that person values me and they have paid for this and I owe it to them to create something.
Yeah.
And it's a virtuous circle, which is why I pay for a number of podcasts to help the little men out there. You have a thought on that?
Well, yeah. And I think it's more the receipt of transaction. Like not only just the support, that's nice. I like the sort of kinship of that. But I also like the idea that I bought a ticket and I want a show and people have the right to demand it. And I like performing to that pressure, as wanky as that sounds. You know, I feel like that's only fair. And also it means you're responsible to someone. And as much as I probably hate to admit it, I do like working for people I like or respect. And I think if you start a Patreon, you get a little club, you're invested. They're as much a part of it as I am. And then also I think, you know, it's a small space, NBL, and it just would be nice to have another place that's quite structured. Right now on Twitter, I do enjoy Twitter very much out there, but it's very scrambled. There's people everywhere. It's hard to sort of motivate people to, you know, like if we all got together, if we had a good space on the NBL and said, we want to go back to 12 minutes, and here's how many of us think that, you'd go somewhere. And so I think with a Patreon, maybe I can just sort of get everyone to a bit more of a, or those that want to more of a spearhead and have a real structured space. So yeah, that's another part of the reason.
And for those that don't know, haven't used Patreon before, it is a good platform. It is actually a communicative space where you can go and, you know, the creators can put stuff and, you know, subscribers can comment back and have conversations and that kind of thing. It is actually a genuine, legitimate platform. Mm. So can you, why would anybody
right
put their money into this?
Like, I think
have you got an elevator pitch?
Yeah, elevator pitch would be, I'm going to start doing one podcast bi-weekly. So one podcast out for free, one podcast to Patreon. So it's only bi-weekly that it's out on Apple Podcasts. Because if you don't make it, not because I want to hide content from people, I'd hate to do that. I dislike doing that. But also I feel like if people are paying, like, you deserve something premium. You deserve an actual exclusive product. So I'll be doing that. And then I might also start doing articles as well, putting stuff up because I feel like, and I certainly don't want to say, oh, just subscribe because, you know, everything else is trash. It's not the case at all. You can easily get your fill for free. Overtime is great. The NBL website's pretty good. There's a few other spots poking around. But it would be nice. And I just feel like if you're not, you know, obviously NBL Media is responsible to the NBL. And I heard an interview on the Post Moves podcast with Lockie and Hamish with Liam Santamaria, in which he said, you know, he has to tread this very peculiar fine line between announcing stuff, treading on clubs' toes. You know, he has to tread that line. So I think it'd be nice to just have someone like myself who's not in that space, being a little bit more, not critical, but critique, you know, throw stuff out and really just be a mouthpiece for people that watch the games and
yeah,
and just want that wee bit more. And I'd like to do it. Yeah.
And if people pay, they can actually then have a say in what it becomes. What,
yeah.
You know, do they, what do they want? You know, if they're putting in a couple of bucks a month, a few bucks, $5 a month, whatever the case may be, what do they want to see for that money?
Yeah. Exactly.
I think it makes a lot of sense. And look, you probably won't say this, but I will, because I'm involved in some other podcast and my own podcast and some other stuff on the internet. None of this is actually free.
No, it's not a lot though. That's going to be my first article. My first article is going to be about podcasts, NBL podcasts specifically, what the audience is, what the cost is. It's going to be, I'm going to lay it all bare, my listenership, all that sort of stuff. You'll get a real sense of it.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But I mean, there are costs. They are true. And it's not even just monetary costs.
It's time.
You got to think about it. It's time. It's, you know, it's energy. It's not talking to your significant other while you're talking to some bloke on the other side of the country. You know, that kind of stuff. That's all costs.
It's true.
You know, and so how do you keep that momentum going? And I would suggest that the money, you know, that you're going to get, it's not about making Joe Core rich.
No.
It's about putting your support behind people who are doing good stuff that you enjoy.
Yeah, and I certainly wouldn't want to appear to be sort of like, oh, I'm championing the sport and the NBL. I just want the NBL to do well. I want the NBL to do well, but I'm not that noble. I am doing this as an outlet to kind of, not so much even the NBL. The NBL product is fine. It's everything around the NBL that needs a little bit. You can never have enough people writing about it, talking about it, and so on and so forth. And yeah, that's what I want to be a part of. You know, the NBL's product is just fine. Good players on the court. It works out for itself. It just needs that. That's what I do.
Have we mentioned what a great job Larry Castleman has done?
Have we? I have it here in the show notes. He's done a great job. We love Larry Castleman.
I think Jeremy, we're
friends. I think
the whole team, just great job.
Yeah, I think we could be roommates. I think, you know, I'd be the messy one, he'd be the clean one. Anyway.
Patreon show. People, I'm sure Patreon. Joe will leave it in the show notes.
I will
think about it.
I will really put out articles as best I can. But yeah, like, round wraps, like there's no one that does a round wrap other than Body, who's worthwhile. Definitely go to his website. That's, you know, a little bit more critical, a little bit more like, you know, fan perspective. I'm not above saying that.
Yep.
Perfect. Andrew, always a pleasure.
Been fun. Thank you for the time.
Yep. Always.